one of the most intense messages of my life right here in Bethlehem. I'll tell you more today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, this is Michael Brown. I'm coming your way from Bethlehem, scheduled to be here for one more day after today, and heading back to the States early on Thursday. To all of you who prayed for me on this trip, from the intense time we had in Jerusalem, ending up with the police and the ultra-Orthodox Jews and the whole bit, to this very intense, very pro-Palestinian conference where I am the one and only voice of dissent in the midst of it. Thank you for praying. Today's message, we should have online very soon. By the time you're hearing my voice now, it may be, but we'll be putting it up on our YouTube channel, Ask Dr. Brown, as soon as we can. So if you subscribe there, as soon as it's up, you will know about it. And if we have a link where it's posted elsewhere, we'll let you know as soon as possible. All right, not taking calls. We're not set up for calls today. When I took calls the other day, we didn't have the best quality on my end. So you'll just be hearing from me, but I hope that's okay since it is my show. Welcome, welcome to The Line of Fire. And when I say Bethlehem, I don't mean Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I mean Bethlehem in Israel, in Judea, Samaria, or what the Palestinians would call the West Bank or the Palestinian territories. So Christ at the Checkpoint is a conference that in the past, I have blasted as being anti-Zionistic to the point of even being anti-Semitic, to the point that people come to the conference and leave full of hostility towards Israel and hatred towards Israel. And different friends of mine have been invited and have spoken here. What was the first conference? 2010, perhaps. They have it every 2 years. And every conference, they've had a speaker come and represent the pro-Israel side, either theologically or politically, normally theologically. And I was asked to come this year and speak. And I would say out of all the speakers they had thus far, I was going to be the most controversial voice on the pro-Israel side, and perhaps the loudest voice in that respect. Now, I got a lot of support for coming. A lot of friends felt it was good and it was the Lord that I came. There were many others who didn't want me here, who felt that my presence legitimized the conference, that to be here was to say that the conference was okay and that people should attend. When in fact, coming here, you're going to walk away with a very negative view of Israel and a very skewed theology. I respected those concerns, and I felt it was the Lord's will that I came. And I did an interview in Israel Today magazine, which is a Messianic Jewish magazine, which I love and appreciate. And one of my colleagues in Israel challenged me, well, what makes me different? Others have come and they've spoken. Why is it going to be any different with me? And I said, look, I've got a louder voice. By God's grace, we've got a great platform on social media, through radio, TV. We can get our voice out. And if this conference is bad and ugly, I can shout that out from the rooftops. And I was challenged again and gave my answers, which I think satisfied my interviewer. Well, when the interview was posted last month, I read it and thought, oh, I sound arrogant. Yikes, that sounds like I'm the man. They're not louder than me. I can be louder than that. I thought, oh, I don't like the way that came out. Either it's just the way it was excerpted and quoted, or the way I spoke it wasn't the best. But either way, some leaders here asked me about it because the interview was posted for subscribers in April, but for everybody yesterday. So I was having great interaction with some of the Palestinian Christian leaders one-on-one. And then they read the article and they said, well, that sounds like a different person. I said, yeah, I don't like the tone. I apologize. I tweeted out an apology saying I sounded arrogant. And I said it at the beginning of my talk. And although my goal was not to sound humble in apologizing for sounding arrogant, I think it helped people to realize who I am and where my heart really is. But all that to say, there's tremendous controversy about me being here and speaking, but I really felt it was the Lord that I did it. And as I interacted with people privately, I thought, oh, this is worse than I even realized. Because as much as I'm a realist, I'm also very naive. I'm just going to believe the best and going to go in. And even though we've had lifelong differences, we're going to fellowship as brothers and we'll kind of mend the fence take down the fence and mend the breach. And often it's, my optimism is not in accordance with reality. So I came in knowing there was going to be great hostility to my position and great resistance to my position. And I was bringing a loving challenge to Palestinian Christians. And I'll tell you what I talked about in a moment. But when we began to interact privately, I was very concerned. I thought, yikes, these guys, I mean, leaders from Europe and local leaders from Bethlehem and others, I thought, yikes, they're more anti-Israel than I realized. They're more radically pro-Palestinian than I realized. Their reading of scriptures is more different than mine than I realized. You know, one guy I was talking to works in Gaza all the time, a Christian leader from England works in Gaza. And I kept saying, you keep making it's all Israel's fault. He said, well, I'm saying, no, Hamas is not good. I said, but bottom line for you, it's always Israel. It's always Israel. It's always Israel. And he said, well, how many Israelis died in the recent conflict, you know, compared to Hamas that were shot, terrorists that were shot, and others that were shot? And he said, no. I said, is that a bad thing? Is that, you have to have Jewish blood for it to be fair for Jews to defend themselves? I mean, think of that. Someone breaks into your house, all right? Five people break into your house, and you're able to shoot and kill them all before they kill your family. They come in with knives, and you're able to pick them off and kill them before they kill your family. Well, how many of your family died? Who in the world would ask that? Thank God no one in your family died. Thank God no Israeli soldiers died as they were defending the border. I'm terribly sorry so many Palestinian activists died and terrorists died. I'm terribly sorry. I hate that. But they brought it on themselves by attacking a border and trying to cross and said, we're going to kill Jews. So as we talked, he said, you know, sometimes I don't see any difference between Hamas and Israel. I thought, what? What? I said, that's as obscene as me saying to you, I don't see any difference between Hitler and the British government. And then I was talking to another Palestinian leader, and he brought up Palestinian Christians that deeply side with the Israeli position, and he spoke of them in derogatory terms. I said, that's just not right. That's not right. And then last night was the opening night, and one of the leaders said to me, don't judge the conference by the opening night. But, yo, boy, I mean, you talk about a Palestinian nationalist conference, from the singing of the national anthem to Palestinian government leaders, you know, blasting away to criticism of President Trump, to the way I described it to the people today was Palestinian with a capital P and Christian with a small C. I was shocked. And one of the Christian leaders was so happy that churches were joining the BDS movement, Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, which is an ugly attack on Israel as a nation. I was shocked. Nonetheless, I have been absolutely welcomed as a brother. I have been welcomed with hugs. I have been welcomed after my talk, I was hugged by people who thanked me for coming. I had people, so thank you for praying. I had people coming up to me, thanking me for the courage to get up and say what I said. I had local Palestinians coming up to me and saying they agreed with me. And I said some very extreme things. I had others saying, look, this is the first step. This is the first step, this honest face-to-face communication. I want to get into the message I brought in a moment, but let me address something larger first. It's not just the conflict here, but this reminded me of something very profound when relationships break down. So let me give you an analogy, all right? I'm a slave owner, okay? And I make you sleep in cages at night. That's how little I think of you. You're my slaves, and I make you sleep in cages. But once a month, I let you sleep in a nice bed to say, hey, I realize you're human. Even though you're a slave, you're human. And I give you a really nice meal, too. And I think none of the other slave owners do that. Look at how generous and magnanimous I am. And I genuinely feel like that. And then you as slaves, you think you're a monster. And because you let us out at night once a month to sleep in a bed and give us a nice meal instead of like the dog food we eat, you think you're some great person. You're a monster. And the perceptions are that different. Have you ever done marital counseling when the marriage is completely breaking down and the husband and wife that have been together for 30 years are enemies? And everything he says, she takes one way. Everything she says, he takes one way. And they're like ships crossing in the night. And you're sitting there trying to counsel, think, oh, man. So the longer I talked with one of the Palestinian leaders, maybe the key man with the conference, we spent probably an hour and a quarter in private conversation yesterday. It was very intense, honest and very intense. The more we talked, the light started to go on. And by the way, I'm not trying to paint me positive and him negative or him positive and me negative. I gave the analogy of slave owner to give something drastic that you think, right, that people have totally different perceptions. I'm not saying he's the slave owner or I'm the slave. I'm not trying to make either one look bad. All right, let's say we're equally right and we're equally wrong. God knows, all right? Let's say that. The more we talk, the clearer it was to me that to him, when he thinks he's bending backwards and going overboard to understand my position and to bring me in to represent my permission, to me, it feels like a complete slamming of my position and a complete disdaining of my position. And to him, when I try to extend grace and open up the door for dialogue, he feels like I'm slamming him and shutting the door in his face. It was just fascinating. The longer we talked, the more I realized how deeply different our perceptions were and our experiences were, and even our reading and understanding of scripture. What does it mean? One, you got to pray. You got to pray, because these are spiritual strongholds. Some of them have existed for centuries. Only prayer can break the walls. And then you've got to humble yourself and pray, as I've been doing daily. God, show me my blind spot. Show me what I'm missing. Show me what I'm not seeing. Show me what I'm not hearing. Show me what I'm not experiencing. And at the same time, I'm praying for them to have eyes to see and a heart to respond. These are massive strongholds, but I delivered maybe one of the most controversial messages of my entire life, and I was well received. As far as I know, I was well received. Thank you for praying. When we come back, I'll take you into that message, a loving challenge to my Palestinian Christian friend.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Joining us today on the Line of Fire, last time I spoke with you, I was in Jerusalem, this time in Bethlehem. Hey, why not join me next year for the tour of a lifetime? Yeah, Holy Fire in the Holy Land, February 1st through 10th. Got that? Now is the time to register, sign up, get in your down payment, because it's going to be here before you know it. That's one. And then two, we don't take like 10 buses or 5 buses or something like that. So when we get to a certain point, we're full. So now is the time to sign up. So you'll get the full benefit of a great tour of Israel, just a wonderful tour of Israel with a great tour guide, with my colleague Scott Volk with you every step of the way. There are key points where I come with extra teaching because the tour guide is, I don't know all the geographical stuff the same way. I come with key teaching in key places and, you know, baptism in the River Jordan that people love to do. And then every night we're doing something together. I'll be doing teaching. We'll have worship, preaching. You come when I do my radio show. So it's really a special, special time together. Go to my website, askdrbrown.org. And click on the Israel link, sign up. I would love to see you there. Okay. So tomorrow, God willing, I do a mini debate with Dr. Munter Isaac, who wrote a 450-page doctoral dissertation on the theology of the land. And basically, it is a classic representation of replacement theology in its most extreme forms. And you know, we're going to have a mini debate about that. And then we're going to take questions from the audience and interact. So really looking forward to that. But today was my day to give a talk, 25 minutes. And they asked me to basically give a biblical case for Christian Zionism or case for Israel having the land. And I said, no, that's not what's on my heart. And you said I could speak on anything. So I brought a threefold message, a loving challenge to my Palestinian Christian friends. And when I got up, I felt tremendously burdened. When I was praying before the message, I really felt the burden of the Lord and a great love for these Palestinian Christians. And bear in mind, I blasted their conference before Christ at the Checkpoint, and I spoke very strongly against it today, very, very strongly against it today, and raised my concerns for the world to hear. Again, as soon as we have the video of the message up, there's slow upload time in the hotel where we are, because lots of people are using internet, so I don't know how soon we'll be able to get it online, but certainly by the end of the week, and if before then, great. Again, if you subscribe to our YouTube channel, Ask Dr. Brown, ASKDR Brown, then you'll know as soon as it's posted, you'll get a notice about it. But this was my time to bring the message. And as I prayed, I felt three things that I wanted to bring. But I did not want to bring in an angry, challenging way, because I was going to say it's a very strong thing, as much as by way of appeal. When I got up and began to speak about my love for the Palestinian Christians, I almost broke down. I got choked up. And thankfully, many of them felt my heart and heard my heart. And I had sent in my notes for the presentation beforehand, and they were very concerned about how things were going to come across. And then afterwards, some of the ones who were very concerned came up and thanked me afterwards and said it was very different than they were expecting. I obviously can't hear the heart, you know? I remember that with emails and texts and social media, that you can't hear the heart through that as fully. But my threefold challenge was this. I would love for Christians in the West to be able to stand with them. I would love for Christians in the West to stand with them if they're mistreated by Israel, if they get the short end of the stick, if they're suffering under their Islamic government. I want Christians in the West to stand with them and show them solidarity. But here's the problem. We as evangelical believers in the West, by and large, believe that God brought the Jewish people back to the land. And we recognize God's hand in that. We also stand with Christians all around the world that are being persecuted by radical Islam. We have a great heart as Christians in the West for persecuted Christians in the Middle East. We decry the genocide of Christians in the Middle East. And yet, there's not a feeling of great solidarity with Palestinian Christians. We don't even think of them that much. Why? Because many times they are so associated with the Palestinian cause that we think of them as one with the Islamic government. That's one problem. The second problem is many of them hold to radical replacement theology and say that God has not brought the Jewish people back to the land and that he has not given them the land. That's serious. And then at a conference like this, where there was bashing of evangelical Christian Zionists, there was bashing of President Trump, and the last thing, I did not mention his name publicly, that's the last thing I was going to do. As much as he was popular among many in Israel, he ain't popular in what are called the Palestinian territories. He is not popular there. But there was so much that did not seem to be about Jesus to me. It seemed to be about politics. And to say this is all about Christ at the Checkpoint, it doesn't work. So I said, look, I would love to help you, but I can't help you unless you do three things. It wasn't a threat. It wasn't a demand. I was just saying I practically can't help you. For example, if you are locked in your room and I don't have a key and you have it locked from the inside, And I got food for you. I have food. Can I bring in the food for you? Unless you unlock the door, I can't give you the food. Even if I leave it by your door, at some point you have to unlock it to get the food, right? If I say, hey, you want to go visit your mom? Here, I got free tickets for you. So here, free tickets, bus, taxi, plane, whatever. Here are the tickets for you. Just, I'm not leaving my house. Well, then I can't help you visit your mom where she lives because she can't move either.
So someone's got to move to make it happen. So that was my appeal. Let me help you. But you got to do three things. Number one, you have to publicly express your disagreement with the Palestinian Authority and Fatah and Hamas when it comes to their support and celebration of terror. You have to do it publicly. Otherwise, look, I'm there last night. They have everyone stand for prayer, and then after prayer, they sing the Palestinian national anthem. That's the first time in my life I ever heard it in person. I was uncomfortable because it was declaring a Palestinian state, and it was also declaring things with a strong pushback against Israel. And that was very uncomfortable. I was already standing. I wasn't going to sit down and be dishonoring in that way. But that, and then Palestinian leaders coming up, then Palestinian Christians bashing Christian Zionists, and then talking about al-Nakba, the catastrophe. That's how they look at the founding of Israel in 1948, call it the catastrophe. And it was just, to me, a pro-Palestinian event. I would not know. And then getting up, Christian leaders talking about our beloved president, Mahmoud Abbas, and I would not know that they distanced themselves from the government celebration of terror. I wouldn't know that at all. And in fact, at the conference, I can virtually guarantee you I was the only one publicly talking about the massive misuse of funds by the Palestinian Authority. I was the only one publicly getting up and talking about Hamas using hundreds of millions of dollars rather than caring for their people, instead building terror tunnels to kill and kidnap Israelis. I was the only one, and will be the only one in the conference, to get up and talk about how when terrorists slaughter Israeli children and women and men, innocent civilians, that they have a school named after them and celebrated as martyrs, and they blow themselves up in a suicide bomb, but their family now gets a pension for life. I'm sure I was the only one to address these things publicly. And I said, look, you must distance yourself from this publicly. And if you can't, because of your Islamic government, then let us help you get the word out. In other words, make a distinction somewhere. Because Christians in the West are not going to stand with Palestinian Christians saying, well, Israel's not treating us right, when we don't hear their voice denouncing the terrorists. You say, well, don't they denounce all forms of violence? Yeah, that says nothing. That does nothing. Did you ever hear in the past, say, Louis Farrakhan would be called on as a black Muslim leader, will you denounce this latest act of Islamic terrorism? And he says, I renounce Islamic terrorism and Jewish terrorism and Christian terrorism. Or after a suicide bombing in the Middle East, Mahmoud Abbas is asked, will you denounce this? He said, I denounce all violence, Palestinian violence, Israeli violence. No, that's not what you do then. That's not what you do. When God forbid, we have a situation where a fanatical Christian shoots and kills an abortion doctor. What does it happen? Maybe every 20 years? That's 20 years too many. But however often it happens, 15 years, we get up as Christian leaders and denounce it, period. This is wrong. This is sinful. This is inexcusable. This is contrary to our Christian ethic, to our biblical ethic. This is sin in God's sight. We are pro-life, therefore we don't murder. We don't get up and say, we renounce that violence and Islamic terrorism, and we don't even say in that context, but remember the guy was killing babies in the womb. No, because this is murder and we say it. Period. So if these leaders cannot make the statement public, then let them meet with us in private and say, we are under the rule of the Palestinian Authority. We are under the thumb of Islamic leaders. As much as we would like to say more, we cannot because of the situation in which we find ourselves. In which case, okay, we understand that. We can now share that with others. But the degree of connectivity between the Palestinian cause and the Palestinian government and the acceptance of even the historical narratives that are all anti-Israel right to the moment, boy, there are massive, massive walls between us that must come down before they can be understood, understanding between us. But that was our first appeal. Renounce any connection to the government celebration of terror and acts of terror. All right, we'll be right back from Bethlehem.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown here in Bethlehem. Bethlehem, different Bethlehems in America, but I am in the Bethlehem, the city in which Jesus, Yeshua, was born. Great joy today I've had of speaking at the Christ at the Checkpoint Conference in Bethlehem / Beit Jala. And yeah, maybe one of the most controversial messages I've given in my entire life, but one that was warmly received. And I did it with fear and trembling before the Lord, not trying to be some hot shot or big shot or big man. Rather, it was being on my face before God in that attitude that I stood up to speak to several hundred believers, maybe 100 plus, maybe more, being local Palestinian Christians who the night before had stood for their national anthem and celebrated their local government and spoken of their beloved president, Mahmoud Abbas. And now I was going to get up and publicly speak against the government and call on the Christians to separate themselves from that government when it celebrated terrorism, when it names schools after terrorists, when it funds the families of terrorists, and on and on. And yet, I was openly and warmly received with the request that I come back and continue to have face-to-face dialogue and speak. And I have several meetings set up privately, dinner with young people and one-on-one with others, which I'm really, really pleased to do and excited to do. Because unless we sit and talk face-to-face, just like a married couple that the family's fallen apart and you try to get the husband and wife in the same room at some point, unless you do that, unless you say, okay, I'm praying that God will show me my blind spots. I'm praying that God will help me to see what I'm missing. And I'm praying that God will show you your blind spots. So it's two ways. Unless we do that, we'll never bridge the gap. And some things, I understand, we won't fix until the Lord returns. But whatever we can fix, we've got to. We've got to strive for unity. That is, after all, the heart of God. So I made a threefold appeal in my talk today. And tomorrow we debate replacement theology. Today was my one time to bring a 25-minute message. And I said, if I am to help, oh, and by the way, I quoted this verse. I said, I'm here as a friend, not an enemy. Here's the email that invited me. We want to challenge and be challenged. In other words, we are inviting you because we disagree. And we want you to present your point of view and articulate it with your own words. That's why they invited me. So I came and openly spoke of my disappointment with things I've heard. I openly spoke of my disagreement with positions they were taking. I openly, lovingly rebuked them for pointing people to Torahs that end up with Jew hatred, hatred of Israel. But I did it with love. And thankfully, they felt the love. Because it was real, it was real, it was real. And I quoted from Proverbs 27:6, faithful are the wounds of a friend, profuse are the kisses of an enemy. And then I read it in Hebrew, ne'amanim pitzei ohev natarot nishikot soneh. And then we put it up in Arabic too. I said, if you don't mind my poor Arabic pronunciation, and read it in Arabic, aminatun hiya druhu muhabbi, rashatun hiya kublatul adui. So I got close enough to get some applause for them. But I said, look, I'm here with an open heart. As I told folks over dinner last night, I'm here with an open heart, an open mind, and an open mouth. So that was the whole posture. And I said, three things you must do if I am to bring you solidarity, if I am to get you the solidarity of Christians in the West. Number one, you've got to openly express your disagreements with the Palestinian Authority and Fatah and Hamas. Otherwise, the feeling is that you're in harmony with them. Number two, you've got to abandon any form of replacement theology, which the bulk of the people there hold to quite passionately. And three, you've got to genuinely put Jesus at the center of the conflict, demonstrated in a heart of love for the Israeli people. I will leave this conference with a deep sense of love for Palestinian Christians and a desire to help them in any way if they are mistreated by the Israeli government. And certainly my heart goes out to them being a tiny, tiny minority under Islamic rule. My great concern, and I've seen it for years now, is people come to these conferences and they leave with animosity towards Israel. They leave with hatred of Israel. They leave with bad attitudes towards Israel. And I address that in the conference today. Now, the main speaker organizer at the conference is Reverend Dr. Munter Isaac. He is a Palestinian pastor. He has a PhD from Oxford University. And he and I met yesterday at some length and talked very candidly. And I've met with people. I said, you have to make a commitment to me. You're going to tell me the truth to my face. I said, obviously, certain things as believers, we're not supposed to say in certain ways. I said, but commit to me. You're not going to worry about if I offend you. Will you commit to me? Or if you offend me? And they said, yes. And I said, and can I say the same to you? And they said, yes. So that's been my position, to lay it on the table. Don't worry about hurting my feelings. Don't worry about offending me. Tell me how you feel, and I'll do the same. Dr. Isaac said, he speaks after me. And by the way, they had me sandwiched between probably the two major replacement theologians there, Dr. Gary Burge and myself. So I had to get a kick out of that. But he was after me, immediately after me. And he said, would it be okay if he takes the first 10 minutes to respond to my 3 points, my 3 requests? And I said, it's your conference, whatever you want to do. So he did that. I told him afterwards, I thought it was wrong. I thought it was the wrong thing to do. And nobody else has it. In other words, every speaker gets up and speaks, and that's that. I'm the one guy in the whole conference bringing a contrary voice on this level. And yet I had to immediately rebut it. So I told him afterwards, I thought that was a mistake that he did that. But otherwise, I felt I was warmly received. And his rebuttal only gave me deeper concerns. In other words, the way he responded to my points gave me deeper concerns than I had before. I had them deeply, now they're even deeper. Nonetheless, he publicly said he really hopes I'll come back, and he really hopes we can continue the dialogue. So for me to come and bring a very strong message, I had critics there. I had one critic, a guy writes with tremendous insight about Israel. Tremendous insight, the church in Israel. And he wrote an article openly critical of me before coming. And afterwards came up to thank me and wanted me to know that he gave me a standing ovation and that he was going to write a real positive article. So all that to say, the fact that Palestinian Christians thanked me and a number of them came up and even told me they agreed with me and that overwhelmingly they said, please come back. Please come back. Speak again. Now I have to get God's mind and we'll see what the future holds. And yet a critic on the Messianic Jewish side who didn't think I should go thanked me. That to me is tremendous success. And I know there was a lot of prayer. Every one of you that prayed, thank you. And keep praying because tomorrow's going to be intense as well. And there's going to be a lot more interaction that I expect is going to be intense. And I went on a tour. I went on a tour to Hebron. And they wanted to show me the worst of what, quote, the Israeli occupation has done and the hardship it's brought on the local Palestinians. And so my team went to this hotel, the walled-off hotel. It's put together by this very popular contemporary artist, and there's graffiti and all this. And so this is the hotel with the worst view. It faces the wall directly, and it's been a boon to the local economy. And I got up and said, that wall is there to save Jewish lives. Now, you can debate whether it's working or not, but I'm telling you, the murder rate went down since the wall was up. That wall was put up to save Jewish lives, and you should be glad. Even if it inconveniences you, you should be glad that Jewish lives are being saved. That's why it went up. It didn't go up lightly. But I said, look, at that hotel, maybe I can find this. Let me look for a moment and see if I can pull this up. There is a little plaque in Hebrew, in Arabic, and in English. And let me see if this is it. No, that's not it. Guestbook people signing, and they are absolutely angry with Israel, and Israel is going to get its due and all this. Okay. This is one of the most biased statements I have ever read about Israel in my life. Okay, are you ready? It's called an uprooted people. In 1948, Israel declared statehood, causing immediate armed conflict with neighboring Arab countries. So Israel declaring statehood causes the problem. And then it specifically claims that Israel is guilty of ethnic cleansing. Ethnic cleansing. Do I have time? Yeah, let me look at the clock here. Let me read the whole statement to you. In 1948, Israel declared statehood, causing immediate armed conflict with neighboring Arab countries. During the hostilities, Israel's military forcibly removed 60% of the Arab population from their land. This event became known by Palestinians as the Nakba catastrophe and is widely considered an act of ethnic cleansing. Today, many former residents remain in limbo. There are now many Palestinians outside the Palestinian territory. There are more Palestinians outside the Palestinian territories than within them. That's not Israel's fault. And Israel did not engage in an act of ethnic cleansing. And in point of fact, in 1948, there were 200,000 Arabs, now identified as Palestinians, who decided to stay in the new state of Israel. About 600,000 left. Why did they leave? Primarily because they were fleeing war. Who caused the war? The five surrounding Arab countries that declared hostilities against Israel. And the Palestinian leaders, the Muslim leaders, told their people, leave Palestine now. A cannon cannot distinguish between a Jew and an Arab. Leave now. And then once we drive the Jews into the sea, come back to your homes and your properties. Well, that didn't happen. That's not Israel's fault. What happened to the 200,000 that stayed? They are now 1,500,000 people. That's not ethnic cleansing, friends. 1,500,000 people. They are 20% of the population. They are 10% of the parliament. They have a seat on the Supreme Court. They are in every aspect of Israeli society, and they're not required to serve in the army, although they're welcome to. And the army will defend them with their own blood, but they're not required to serve. I publicly got up and said, your conference encourages folks to go on that tour and to go to that hotel and to get all kinds of propaganda. They're going to leave with hatred of Israel. A friend of mine, a Jew-loving friend, Israel-loving friend, went there and left feeling hatred towards Israel. That's how propagandistic it is. And that is not putting Jesus at the center. I said this openly, publicly, and yet I was warmly received. Amazing.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We have one last segment, but it's a good-sized segment. Talk more about God's heart for Israel, God's heart for Palestinian Christians. And I said, I'm here as a friend of Israel, and I'm here as a friend of Palestinian Christians. Can you be both? And the answer is yes. Yes, you can. If you stand for justice, if you stand for what's right, you can. And I said, look, you've got to repudiate your replacement theology. Otherwise, you don't have a heart for what God's doing. In other words, if I want to get people to stand with you and you reject the validity of Israel today and people know the core of their being, God brought the Jewish people back to land. Only God can do that because he scattered us in our wrath. No one has the power to regather us. God regathered us. God did it. So for that, if you reject that, it's going to be very hard to get Christians in the West to show you solidarity when you're perceived to be in solidarity with your Islamic anti-Israel government, one, and two, when you don't believe that the modern state of Israel is a fulfillment of prophecy and you don't believe God has national promises that remain for Israel. Yikes. How's it going to be solidarity? So when I made that appeal in the conference and pointed to God's promises for Israel and urged a recognition of that, there was an immediate rebuttal in the name of replacement theology that Jesus has replaced Israel as the center of God's plan. Well, Jesus was always the center of God's plan. And Jesus is part of Israel. It's not a separate thing. Jesus is part of Israel. And in point of fact,
the whole mission of Israel finds its fulfillment in Jesus the Messiah. Isn't it ludicrous to say that Jesus, the Jewish Messiah, comes and cancels the promises to Israel? He doesn't cancel the promise to Israel. He confirms the promises to Israel. So I did my best to urge this on the people, and I'm praying that hearts and minds would be open. I'm praying that attitudes would change. I'm praying for that. But there's a really important principle in terms of when we reach out. And you know me, I'm bold, I'm to the point, I'm direct. By God's grace, I've been given backbone. It's a gift from God that I have to stand in controversial areas and not back down. In fact, what would push a normal person back pushes me forward. That's just God's calling and grace on my life. It seems very natural for me to respond these ways under pressure. You know what I'm saying? It's not like, oh, I have to summon up my courage, I have to summon up. No, it's just the grace of God. Just like you do things and I think, how can you possibly do that? I could never do that. That's just God's grace at work in us. But a principle we can all live by is this. A harsh word stirs up strife. A soft answer turns away anger, but a harsh word stirs up strife. Proverbs 15:1. I spoke many things today that were very direct and very strong and very confrontational and very challenging and in the natural, very offensive. And I have people hugging me afterwards. I'm talking about people that should have been offended, thanking me, asking me to continue the dialogue that can only be because of the grace of God expressed in humility. Proverbs 25:15 tells us that a soft answer breaks the bone. What I'm saying is you can speak the truth in love. Sometimes we want to be so loving and nice and not offend anyone that nobody knows what we're talking about. We get done talking for a half hour and nobody has a clue what we're talking about. We're just a dental and night. We beat around the bush and no one has any idea. Picture you go to the doctor and he spends 20 minutes. Oh, well, and no, and I really have hope for your future. Well, doc, am I sick or not? Did the test come out negative or positive? Tell me, doctor. You know, we don't need all the nice little sweet. We need the truth. But then sometimes we come with the truth and smash people over the head. There's no way they could possibly receive it. The way we deliver it is so harsh and so confrontational. There's no way they can receive it. How about speaking the truth in love? You know, the same principle that God laid on my heart dealing with LGBT activism was the same thing here. Speak the truth in love. Reach out and resist. Resist the agenda you differ with, but reach out to the people. That's what I sought to do. But I did it with the help of your prayers. Now, I want to speak to you from the heart for a moment here. Everything I believe and feel has only been intensified and deepened on this trip. You say, but what about going to Hebron and seeing how the Jewish settlement there, settlers, how it's disrupted the whole city? And, well, that's not news to me. I want to better understand the history. I want to better understand the whole situation of how the settlers are there, what happened in the heart of the city. I know the longer term history of the city and the terrible massacre against the Jews in 1929. It was also there that there was the horrific massacre, a Jewish doctor massacring Muslims in a mosque at the same city. What was that, 25 years ago? Sorry, I should know the exact date on that. The massacre with Baruch Goldstein, Dr. Goldstein. But in point of fact, I need to understand more details and why things have happened the way they have. But bottom line, I don't think Israel's perfect. I don't think everything Israel does is perfect. I don't think everything Israel does is right. But I do know that Israel does have a heart for justice. And I do know that a lot of the suffering of the Palestinians is brought on by their corrupt leadership. I know that as well. But please hear my heart. Everything that I felt, that I believe theologically, experientially, has only been intensified by being here. In other words, who's right, who's wrong, has only been intensified by being here. Nothing's changed, except my heart of love has deepened. But I want to say that I went as an ambassador. I went as an ambassador for the Messianic Jewish movement, even though many Messianic Jews didn't want me to go. I went as an ambassador for the cause of the gospel. I went as an ambassador for you, who listen to me, who read me, who watch me, who pray for me, to bring a message. God's fashioned me to do this, friends. Here we are in the streets of Jerusalem a few days ago, in the midst of sharing the gospel with ultra-Orthodox Jews, and the Jesus they know is not the Yeshua of truth, the Yeshua of the Bible. The Jesus they know is a myth, someone who never lived. So the one they're cursing and spitting on the ground and cursing and saying, Chas v'shalom, that we believe in him. God forbid, heaven forbid, that we should believe in him. That's someone they should reject. The one they were cursing and spitting at is someone they should reject. God's called me to bring the real Yeshua to them, the real Messiah to the Jewish people. I've been called and anointed to do it. And he's also called me to go into difficult areas as a bridge builder, as a peacemaker, not a troublemaker, as we've done here. So here's what I want to say to you. We are launching our Real Messiah broadcast in a week from tomorrow. We launch the Real Messiah broadcast. I can't believe it's coming this quickly. It's going to be every Wednesday night, 9 to 10 in the evening on WMCA, our great station in New York City that blankets New York. You say, isn't it a Christian station? It is, but it has a lot of Jewish listeners, and we're going to get word out every way we know how, and the station is going to get word out as widely as possible to let people know we're on the air now. We've been off the air in New York for a while. We had many Jewish listeners when we were on, but now for the first time ever, every week is Jewish outreach. It's not to talk so much about the Jewish roots of the Christian faith. It's not to talk about contemporary news in Israel, like we do on our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast here, like we'll do this week on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. It is exclusively for Jewish outreach. I need your prayer and I need your support. Why? Okay, nothing's going to happen without the Holy Spirit working. When I'm with these religious Jews here in Jerusalem, I've been with them in New York earlier in the year. It's underscored to me, nothing's going to happen without the Holy Spirit opening hearts and minds. I can give the world's greatest arguments. I can give the most amazing presentations of history and of scripture, the history of the world. I mean, if I could do that, of course I can't do it. But if I could do that, nobody's ever heard anything like this. And not a soul's going to get saved. Not a soul. The Holy Spirit has to open hearts and minds. I covet your prayers. But I need your support also. Let me tell you why. God has supplied every dime for the broadcast, meaning to pay for the airtime and actually to pay for our team that's involved with the broadcast. Because we have a team engineering the show, doing different things. As we're able to do our live stream on YouTube and Facebook, it's a team effort. So there are a number of people that are paid to do that, but every dime of that has been paid in advance. We've never had this happen before for one whole year. But we must pour lots of money into fully developing our Real Messiah website. It's got a ton on it, it's great, but it's like 10% of where it needs to be for everything we want to do. And we've got to get it out fully in Hebrew, because we're going to have one of my key books, The Real Kosher Jesus, translated into Hebrew very soon. And we have the money for that. We have the money for that. Yes. And it's going to be translated into Hebrew with a campaign to get it out to Israelis. All right. But we must improve what we have. We need to bring on more staff to help with Jewish inquirers. Will you stand with me today? We're on the front lines as much as any person you'll meet in the world. Will you stand with me in prayer and support? Go to my website right now, askdrbrown.org. Click on donate. Your gift, one time or monthly, to help us in Jewish ministry is going to help bring in an amazing harvest. The lost sheep of the house of Israel are coming home.